Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Why are we so panicked? 60,000 people have already died this year from the flu. And yet, if the coronavirus hadn't appeared on the scene, we would not even care. We should care, but we wouldn't really care. We wouldn't be buying all the toilet paper off the shelves. We wouldn't be freaking out. We wouldn't be hovering around the mainstream media's reports. The market wouldn't have crashed. But we have several hundred cases of this other virus, which is essentially about the same as the flu, and we're freaking out. Dr. Charles Pemberton, Dimensions Family Therapy, is here to help us sort out why we panic. My friend, Dr. Charles Pemberton, a clinical counselor at Dimensions Family Therapy, is joining us now on the Disruption Zone. Hello, sir. How are you?
I am well. How are you, Leland?
I'm good. It's always good talking to you. So I want to figure out, the reason why I wanted to have you on here, I want to figure out why are people panicking? What is the root cause? Because earlier I went over the statistics. About 60,000 people have already died from the flu this year. And nobody panics about that. In fact, if the coronavirus wasn't on the scene, life would be normal and the market wouldn't have crashed. And yet here we are with several hundred cases of something that is very much like the flu with very similar death rates, as far as we can tell. And people are losing their ever-loving minds. I can't find toilet paper.
Right, right. Well, so let me just throw another kink in that. You look up the rates on the flu, influenza. Look up the rates of daily suicides compared to corona or the flu, and it's much greater. But again, we don't want to deal with that. You know, we don't deal with that. Okay, so the first issue with that is, generally speaking, our minds can't comprehend the ratios that you're throwing at us.
Right.
When you talk about, 0.01%, when you talk about 350 million people, when you talk about, our brains can't comprehend that. Now, we can understand 600 people. We can understand, 40 people have died in the past however many hours. But when you start looking at the overarching numbers and making those types of comparisons, our brains generally aren't set up to really be able to process that. So, mathematicians, statistics, people that are in research can look at that and say, yeah, well, that's not that big of a deal. That's right. Not significant. But when your brain can't process the math in that way, when you're not geared toward that, those numbers mean nothing. I mean, that's a logical response, and what we're seeing from people is that an emotional response.
Okay, so what is driving the emotion behind this? Because it's new, it's different, it's novel. Is that what it is? I mean, again, as far as we know, and I say this with a caveat that things could change, but as far as we know, this isn't going to pan out to be much more severe than the flu. And I know people are throwing around 3% death rate numbers, but that's not really accurate when you consider that 80 to 90% of the people who come down with coronavirus almost don't know it, or they never report because it's so mild. So that those 3% numbers are just irresponsible to quote, because we just don't know, and it's probably much more like 0.1%. But that being said, is it the unknown?
It is. It's the, and you said it right off the bat, it's that it's new, it's novel, meaning it's unfamiliar to us, and it's unexpected. Those are the two big things for that emotional response. There's also lack of control issue, but that ties into this. This is new. I mean, we know what the flu is. Everybody knows what the flu is. It's been around forever. I mean, we all make fun of, do I get my flu shot or not? Does it really do anything? We know what that is, and we know people die of it. We know that there's that vulnerable set of our population that we really need to be careful of, but we know the flu. And had we talked about COVID-19 as the flu, the flu's worse this year,
right,
we probably wouldn't have had this type of fear. but it wasn't publicized, because it's not accurate, as, oh, a strain of the flu.
Right.
It came out in the media as this new thing, COVID-19. And so that new thing, that unexpected to come out of, is one of the big fears that we have. Now, there's a couple other things with that. One is control, and another one is proximity. We weren't so worried about this when it was in China.
Right.
But now that it's here, well, now that it's in my state and in my city, oh, now I get even more worried about this because now it's close.
Right.
I worry about it because there's that proximity piece.
All right, I'm going to play some audio from you from the great movie Men in Black. Will Smith, Tommy Lee Jones talking things over near the end of the movie.
Humans, for the most part, don't have a clue. They don't want one or need one either. They're happy. They think they have a good bead on things.
Well, why the big secret? People are smart. They can handle it.
A person is smart. People are dumb, panicky, dangerous animals, and you know it.
So there's an element of panic to this, too, isn't there, in why people are buying toilet paper, which is completely, to quote Dr. Spock, illogical, because this particular virus doesn't, it's not a butt infection, it's a chest infection, you know?
Right. This flu is not going to affect our digestive system. Maybe we won't eat as well, but it's not going to affect our digestive system. But two issues. One, we get into this groupthink. So once one person starts running and buying stuff, everybody else does. You know, here the big thing is that when it snows, or it might snow, everybody goes buys all the ingredients for French toast, because that's what we do when it snows. You know, it's that milk, bread, and eggs.
Gotta get the milk and bread.
Right. That's what we do here. We don't make French toast when it snows, but that's what we buy. So, and once the news starts talking about it, oh, now be careful. And remember, you don't really have to go buy milk. Oh, that's right. It's snowing. I have to go buy milk. So once it starts, it gets into that feedback loop where everybody has to go get it.
Right.
And because we're a societal, you know, kind of entity, well, if everybody else is buying this, then they might know something I don't. So I better jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
The other piece is if I go buy toilet paper, it gives me some sense of control. If I go buy hand sanitizer and wipes, it gives me some sense of control, because that's the other emotional piece of this.
Right.
I have no control over this. We don't know enough about it to know, well, how do I really get infected? Who is really infected? What exactly do I need to do? Well, we do know that. Wash your hands.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's something that it's too common sense. It can't just be that easy.
Right.
So it gives us a sense of control. I'm going to go out and I'm going to clear the shelves of toilet paper or of, you know, hand sanitizer or whatever it might be, because then I have actually done something as opposed to just sit here and wait.
You know those crane games at Chuck E. Cheese's that reach and try to get the teddy bear out, and you have to try to manipulate them, and it's like, you know the man's got you screwed on that. There was a picture of that, of one of those filled with toilet paper that amusement park in Great Britain did, and I posted the picture of it, and I was like, I said, hey, since I struck out at the toilet paper aisle at the Kroger, I've been hanging out here at Chuck E. Cheese's all day hoping to win this lottery. You know, it's so, and it got a huge response, because what also is weird to me is this sort of dichotomy in society where, on one hand, everybody's doing the groupthink herd mentality, and on the other hand, we're all laughing at everybody. So, you know, it's like I can't tell where the majority of society is. On one hand, if I post something making fun of the people that are freaking out, everybody laughs. But then at the same time, all of them are going to buy toilet paper, myself included. You know, it's like, how does that happen?
And that's where that our private sense of security and what we acknowledge publicly can be very different. And that's exactly what you're seeing. You know, secretly at home, I'm scrolling through social media laughing at all the memes. But at the same time, I'm thinking, oh, I need to wash my hands. It's been 30 seconds.
Right.
So I think that's something else that we have to take in mind. I would caution everybody that's listening to this that the people we really need to be worried about is those vulnerable population, the people that are, you know, we've all heard this. The other thing that I'll tell people is watch for your kids. I mean, I have even seen it in my own house where, because it's on the media, because mom and dad are talking about it, because we've got, you know, what is it going to interrupt plans? They get worried about it themselves.
Right.
And they understand this even far less than we do as adults. I've lived through Ebola. I've lived through the you know, swine flu and the bird flu. I've lived through all of those. My kids haven't. And so this is novel, even more novel to them.
Right.
So I would caution people, watch what you're talking about in front of your kids. Watch what you're letting them get exposed to, and try to, you know, tamp that down. This doesn't affect kids the way the flu does.
Right.
So they're going to be fine. I'm not worried about kids generally at all.
I think it's interesting, too, you look at the political divide in America. In Obama's administration, when there was an Ebola outbreak, Obama brought Ebola patients back to America. Everybody on the right freaked out. Fox News covered it 24/7. There was no big deal to CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS. Now we're on the other end of that. And President Trump is being blasted by those same media outlets for just about anything he does and anything he's doing in handling this thing. And I find it interesting how we can even somehow find a way to politicize something like this. It's almost silliness, but why are we so hyper-political about absolutely everything these days, including a virus?
Well, so I have to say that I kind of blame media and social media and all of those outlets that our ethics and our morals haven't really caught up with, because all of a sudden everybody can be a newscaster.
Right.
You know, I can create a podcast.
Yep.
I can create a Facebook page. And yet we as a society, we don't know how to judge what is good information and what is bad information. And all of that is built on the number of hits, the number of likes. So the more outrageous I can be, the more that I'm going to increase my value. And I think that we haven't really caught up with that attitude yet, that maybe these aren't the best places to get all of our information. You know, we don't really vet any of that anymore. We don't have time to, or we don't know how to. So I think that all of that highly polarized attitude, I think we're going to see it in everything. I think we're
right.
going to see it in not only politics, but medication and medicine. We're going to see it in religion. We're going to see it, you know, across the board. I'm waiting for it to be, you know, wait, you use them to for your lawn care service? Why don't you use this other?
Right.
I think it's going to go everywhere.
Yeah, he's got a Trump sticker on his bumper. You don't want to use that lawn guy. Yeah, it's really terrifying. All right, so back to the mentality here. Are we experiencing something as simple as herd mentality when in response to this? I mean, humans, after all, are just really smart animals that know how to reason, right? And yet we lose our ability to reason in times like this.
Well, so people always ask me for, you know, these real, give me a simple answer, yes or no, and it
right.
never really is that easy. Is a part of this kind of that group or herd mentality? Absolutely it is. We get scared, and as one person gets scared, more people get scared, and more people get scared. So, yes, part of it is that. Now, that said, there is also some good things that are coming out of this, and I think that the idea of, hey, we really kind of need to protect a certain level of the population. We all really need to cover our mouths when, you know, with our sneeze and our coughs. We need to wash our hands more. I mean, I heard some statistic that something like only 3 out of 10 people wash their hands when they leave the bathroom.
Right.
Okay, those are some basic things that we need to get better at. And so I think there are some benefits to this, and I think we do need to be worried to a point. So it's not all herd mentality, but I do think we have to be very careful. And we are prone to be an anxious species.
Right.
We are prone to kind of go down that rabbit hole and things get really bad. So I think we really also have to resist the urge of going down that hole of being dropped into this is, you know, woe is me, look how awful it is, and just, you know, let's just ride this out. Let's see where it is and that piece, and support one another with this rather than that doom and gloom.
I,
but yeah, a lot of it is that herd mentality. Once my neighbors get worried, so do I.
Well, and I agree with you about the good that could come out of this. For one thing, I don't think we pay enough attention to protecting the elderly from the flu every year. And now maybe we will going forward, because if we realize 60,000 of them die every year because of this, we might wake up and go, hey, you know, this is a problem. We don't want to lose grandma and grandpa. On the other hand,
I'm not worried about my 14-year-old coming home with this. He's going to come home, he's going to be sick for a couple of days, and he's going to be fine.
Right.
I'm more worried about, well, is he going to give it to me? Am I going to give it to my parents?
Right.
Those are the things that, and not just my family, but am I going to give it to somebody who is more vulnerable? That's my concern. So then when we talk about shutting down, you know, now it's weekend services for churches. That's the latest that I saw.
Yeah.
On one hand, there's the part of me that says, wow, that might be an overreaction. On the other hand, I'm thinking that could really save a certain level of the population that we need to watch out for.
Right. Yeah. I do think it's silly, though, that we're talking about shutting down things like the NCAA tournament, as far as they'll still do it. But, you know, there were some discussions about potentially not allowing, you know, not selling tickets and just having people watch the games in front of empty arenas on TV, which would be incredibly boring. I think that's silly because people have a choice whether or not to go to events like that, you know, and it's like, it's not like it's mandatory.
Well, so in 2 months, we're going to have the Kentucky Derby.
Right.
I heard an interviewer this morning talk about, well, maybe they'll be watching from their, you know, from their screens, but there won't be a live audience in front of them.
Right.
And I'm thinking that is a little bit premature to be talking about not having anyone at an event that is 2 months away.
That's also inconceivable that the Kentucky Derby would not be done in front of a live audience. And this, I was actually talking to my wife about this the other night. She was like, how does this, you know, how in the world is this affecting the economy? And I was like, the ripple effect from the panic is staggering. When you have, like I said, take for instance the Kentucky Derby, you know, the city of Louisville. Can you imagine the economic devastation it would bring to not have an audience at the Kentucky Derby? Yeah, I mean, do you know how much money, how many people's businesses, lives literally depend on the four-week period from Thunder over Louisville through, or 5 week period through the Derby? I mean, there are businesses that literally would go out of business but for that period of time when so many people are in town and milling about downtown. That's a pretty terrifying prospect, and that could be all based on panic over a virus that's really no worse than the flu. That's insane.
Right. And okay, so first comment to that is that, no, I really can't, because my head doesn't really wrap around those ratios.
Right.
But I know it would be devastating. And, you know, I was talking to someone earlier in the week about this, and the idea was, well, you know, this COVID-19, it's shut down the stock market, and it's wreaked this havoc. And I corrected them, and I said, no, the virus hasn't done this.
Right.
The fear of the virus has done this.
Yeah.
Now, has it had an impact? Well, yeah, China has kind of shut down because they've got so many people that are ill and things. Yes, there has been that. But the idea that the NCAA is going to shut down at this point, I mean, I'm not saying they are, but, you know, that talk is not about the virus, but the fear of the virus.
Right.
And that is where I think we all need to kind of stop and think, okay, what can we do to protect ourselves?
Yeah.
You know, is it, you know, do I want my elderly father to go to get on a plane and fly to a Final Four tournament?
Right.
No, I'm not sure I want him to do that.
Yeah.
Would I do that if I had tickets? Sure. Well, it depends upon who is playing. But other people, yeah.
Well, the rest of us are can take advantage of some pretty impressive prices for travel. I was talking to a friend the other day that was on a plane, and nobody had more than one person in any of their rows. And so everybody had the full three row. And I'm like, I could fly in those conditions. You're not likely to get a disease or a virus in those conditions when nobody's on the plane. And I just heard a story yesterday that Broadway shows in New York, I could go see 12 Angry Men for $50 right now. Are you kidding me? If I could get a cheap flight to New York and go see 12 Angry Men on Broadway for $50, I'll take advantage of it. But you're right. I don't want my elderly father, who's 77 and, you know, diabetic, I don't want him getting anywhere near something like that.
That's right. That's right. And then I have to be smart enough that if I do that, when I come back home, no, Dad, I'm going to stay away from you for 2 weeks to make sure that I haven't been exposed to anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the other piece is there are just some common sense pieces that we need to be aware of that we often aren't. I mean, there's the story of the father who was exposed to the virus and still went to the school dance with his daughter. And it's like we've got to, as a society, use that common sense.
Yeah.
Going back to that whole herd mentality, it's a shame that we have this herd mentality to buy toilet paper. But we don't have this herd mentality to – oh, maybe I should just stay home because
right.
I'm sick.
Right, yeah.
Now, there's other issues with that. I know finances and things, but it's one of those I wish we had that mentality on both sides.
Yeah. I'm encouraging healthy people. If you're healthy and you don't have any signs and symptoms and you're not elderly, I'm encouraging people to go out and eat at a restaurant. Go out and patronize a small business, because that's my biggest fear is that ripple down in the economy. And what could happen there? Are you seeing, before I let you go, are you seeing any, because you and I talk about after mass shootings, I'll have you on the program and we'll talk about, you know, how do we talk to our kids about this disease or about this situation or whatever. Are you seeing any trauma from this? Are you seeing any, do you have any recommendations for how people can talk to their children about this virus? As you said, they don't quite understand what's happening and they're seeing this panic. Can you give some advice towards that?
Well, so I haven't seen it outside, you know, professionally yet. I mean, nobody's come into my office. I haven't seen it out in the community. I haven't seen that directly yet. But I will tell you that personally, within my own home, I have kind of seen that kind of happen with my own kids. I have a 14-year-old, and I have a freshman at U of K, and I've talked to them both this week, and they've both voice concerns about, you know, I've got this sore throat, you know, what does that mean? No, son, you've got a stopped up nose and you mouth breathed all night long, and, you know, let's give you some medicine, you'll be fine. And my son at U of K is, you know, well, what if they shut down the school? They're shutting down other schools. How do I protect myself here? And they're good questions, but it's that heightened level of awareness. And what we have to remember is these are still kids, and we have to talk to them at their developmental level, wherever their developmental level is. If you're talking to your 6-year-old or your 16-year-old, talk to them appropriately, answer their questions. And then the biggest thing I would say is watch when you're talking to other adults, watch what you say when those ears are around.
Yeah.
Be careful with that, because they will hear and then they may not understand, and then they'll kind of put together their own story of what's going on. Check in with them and encourage them however you can to make common sense decisions.
That makes sense.
You know, I talked to mine about, you know, hey, you know, 20 seconds is about the intro for the Star Trek voiceover. So say that in your head while you're washing your hands. You know, I'll give you bonus points if you start humming the theme song afterwards. But, you know, to find a way to talk to your kids, make that connection, encourage those things. But at the same time, check in and make sure that they're not overly anxious, because
right.
they're going to have that same concern we did, that yep. lack of control. I don't understand it. I've never been down this road before.
Makes sense. Dr. Charles Pemberton, clinical counselor at Dimensions Family Therapy. It is always great talking to you. Appreciate your level head. And thanks for the advice in all of this.
No problem. Thank you much, Leland.
All right. Have a great day. Yeah, it's all just kind of like people are herd animals. I mean, as Tommy Lee Jones said, a person is smart. People are dumb, stupid, jumpy animals, panicky animals. So great talking to Dr. Charles Pemberton. We've got so much more coming down the pike for you on the podcast. Congressman Thomas Massie will be joining us soon for part 3, another installment of The Swamp Monster. We're going to talk about farm freedom and FISA reform. So I think you'll absolutely enjoy that episode. That is coming your way soon. Also, a man who was who faced down a crocodile in the Australian outback. Pretty fascinating stuff. Those stories and more coming. The best way you can help me is to share this podcast with your friends and family. You can download it and subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts or Google Play or Spreaker as well, wherever podcasts are found. And share this with your friends and family The more people that subscribe to the podcast, it's totally free, the bigger and broader our voice gets. And so that is much appreciated. Thanks to our co-executive producer, Cameron Mills, for production support. We're always thankful to Neil Kesterson at Dynamics Productions over in Lexington, Kentucky, dxaudio.com. Anything from just reforming old tapes, videotapes of family things that you might want to restore, and put on a more modern format, all the way to Hollywood Productions. That guy can get it done. He's the best audio engineer I've ever known. So a big appreciation to DX Audio. We're on Twitter. It's at Leland Show. If you want to follow along, or at Zone Disruption. And we're on Instagram. It's at Greatly Londo and at The Disruption Zone. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone.